Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What a week it is. County teams are back training. The draws have been made. In a couple of weeks' time, we'll come back and preview the National Football League. But today is all about the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. We will look at the championship in every province and at the All-Ireland series as well. It's a straight knockout championship, no Super 8s and no backdoor. Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer, Oisín McConville, and by Keith Higgins, the recently retired Mayo footballer, who is admired and respected as one of the best players of the last decade. Keith, I have to ask you, when you saw the draw being made this week, did you get a yearning to get back and play football?
Yeah, I suppose it was, when you look at it, again, no disrespect, I suppose, to Sligo or Leitrim, you know, from a Mayo point of view, you're looking, right, we should be in a kind of final here against Galway, Roscommon, and straight away, that's kind of where you want to be against those two boys. You know, they're your biggest rivals in Connacht. So, yeah, there was a small bit of kind of jealousy there, I suppose, when you're looking at it that. But, yeah, look, from a personal point of view, I kind of made my bed now at this stage, kind of happy enough with the decision. So, focus on getting back out training with the hurlers last night, to be honest.
Why did you stop playing football?
I just felt, I suppose, towards the end of last year, particularly in training, you know, I wasn't really getting to the level where I wanted to be at or where I was at previous years, where I felt I could really make a difference on the team. Or, you know, it wasn't the fact that I wasn't starting or anything like that. I just personally, I didn't feel like I was at the level I wanted to be to compete. And I was kind of looking forward to next year, thinking if that's the way I'm feeling, if that's the way the body is, I'd be going training, getting frustrated, getting kind of a bit pissed off at myself, not being at that level. And just didn't want to go through a year of that, to be honest. Didn't want to go through a year of feeling pissed off about the whole thing, not enjoying it. So I just thought it was right to go at that stage and not go through all of that, to be honest.
Was it physical or mental?
Physical, I think, really, yeah. Like I said, the body wasn't bad. I wasn't, you know, plagued with injuries or anything like that. But it was literally the speed that it was there before probably was a bit off. Getting back to the same fitness levels was a bit off. And like when you're in training and you have guys bursting past, you're like, right, well, I can't put up with this for a year. Or, you know, how would I manage out in Croke Park on a big open pitch? So that was the real factor for me. And I just didn't want to go through that kind of feeling, getting frustrated with things next year. So I just thought it was better to leave it there and kind of thankfully had the innings that I had.
Did you feel you were struggling in training then? Like were you not coping?
I suppose there was times I would have felt like I was struggling, yeah. And then there was times I would have felt, geez, I'm going all right here. I could be pushing for a starting spot. But I suppose it was very inconsistent. You know, there was one day it could be very good, one day it could be very bad. And I suppose, you know, I said back over the years, I would never really experience that without, I suppose, wanting to sound too cocky or anything like that, you know. So when I was at that stage, I just thought, well, will I get back to where I wanted to be, where I'm consistently at that level every night of training, you know. So that was it, really. And then I think, like I said, I just didn't want to go through the mental side of being frustrated all year. So it was kind of a bit of both. But I think physically was the main thing. I just didn't feel I was where I needed to be. Like when you're rushing mullion, driving by and runs and training and mini games and all that, it's not a pretty place to be.
Did you feel you couldn't make a difference in the All-Ireland final last year, or that you wouldn't have made a difference if you'd come on?
Look, when you're sitting on the bench and you're watching the game, I'd say every one of the 15 or 16 subs or whatever was there would have felt, geez, I can make a difference when I come on here. But this was in the heat of the moment, looking back on it. Would I have made a difference? I don't know. I mean, you know, you come on maybe at halftime there, we were man up for the first 10 minutes. It would have been really an ideal situation to maybe try and settle into it, not having to run around after Conor Callan or something like that, you know. But yeah, I felt like I could have made a difference at that stage. But again, that's maybe kind of ego talking as well. Like every player thinks that they can make a difference. So you know, like I felt probably towards the end of the year, I was probably getting a bit closer to where I wanted to be. But again, I just didn't think I was really where I could have been, if that makes sense.
Can I ask you, you played so many matches cornerback, but you also played wing back and you played in the forwards. What do you think your best position was? Where would you like to have played your time for Mayo?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like I would have played all my career with the club would have been in the half back line, centre back, and that's where I would have been very comfortable. But was kind of tried there a couple of times at Mayo over the years and in training and all that. And it's a different kettle of fish playing centre back for an intermediate team in Mayo than it is playing inter county level, you know. So I did at inter county level, I felt more comfortable cornerback, to be honest. I was kind of happy there. Obviously, a couple of the managers tried me up in the forwards, and you know, I didn't mind where they played me, but I suppose ultimately I felt more comfortable back cornerback. Yeah,
Oisín has had some fairly brutal things to say about cornerbacks on the show in general, and I'm wondering if you want to issue some sort of a formal apology, Oisín.
Well, this is a time where you either apologize or you double down. And I think Keith has already made the point that he was not just a cornerback. So he's probably excluded from the club that I'd be talking about. I play with the boys I'd be
taking
talking
the
about,
easy way out here, is it?
Yeah.
The boys I'd be talking about are some of the lads I would have played with in particular, who I never ever seen kick the ball, always fisted the ball out and stuff like that. And I just thought, what's the point, lads? But anyway, you still need
but
cornerbacks.
I think that's the way the game has changed. Like,
cornerbacks are human beings as well, so I suppose I need to move on as well.
If we look at the Connacht Championship and the draw, and as you say, it's Mayo on the same side as Sligo, start playing Sligo, and if Mayo beats Sligo, they play Leitrim. What is the mindset in Mayo now when you go and play either Sligo or Leitrim?
I suppose if we looked at last year, even when we played Leitrim, the mindset was literally just to go and win. Because I suppose, and again, like some people might look at this and think that, you know, players are bullshit sometimes when they're talking, that they just really want to go out and win every game regardless of who they're playing. But the first thing is just to win. And yeah, you might want to put in a decent score, a decent performance. But the bottom line for these guys is it's knockout. They just want to get to another kind of final against Galway or Roscommon. Like. And, you know, if Sligo or Leitrim are the hurdles that are the win in the way, you just want to go out and win it. So I wouldn't say there's, you know, complacency is probably not the right word. You will be confident going in and beating them and probably should be beating them handy. But at the same time, the management will make sure that it's kind of taken serious as any other game. Like, they will put in the same preparation for it. So then from a player's point of view, you just go out. It's a game you have to win. It's as simple as that.
And so you can't really see a way. You, like, the presumption you would have is that Mayo will come through that side. And then it's Galway or Roscommon in the final. What do you think happened to Galway last year? After a brilliant lead in the first section and then really disappointing second half of the section and then a really competitive Connacht final. But what went wrong for Galway last year?
Yeah, look, you'll never be able to kind of put your finger on exactly what went wrong, but I suppose you look at it from the start of the year, and I think I nearly compare them to us back in 2019 when James came in. Obviously, you have a new manager. Players are looking forward to it. You're probably back training a bit earlier than you normally would be. So there is a bounce off it. And like I said, we had a very good start to the league in 2019. Galway had something similar. They were playing very good. And then obviously with lockdown, it just shut everything down. It kind of takes all that momentum away from them. I think they kind of came back then for the start of the league after lockdown. They probably had a good few injuries. You know, the day we played them in Tuam Stadium, they were missing an awful amount of players. And then obviously with not having a game against Sligo, they were literally going into a big bit of a break there at the championship. So I really just do think it was that lockdown that really kind of put a halt to them. They probably weren't really sure where they were then when they came back, and we gave them such a good beating in Tuam. But like, to then come championship, like, it's always going to be competitive, you know. Open Pier Stadium was a breezy place the best of times, so it was always going to need to be a game of two halves. Like, so I really just do think it was the lockdown just put a huge stall to momentum, and they probably just weren't sure where they were at then when they came back after.
Do you think there's a team coming in Galway?
I hope not. But yeah, look, in fairness to Galway, they always produce very good footballers and very good forwards. I suppose the one thing you'd have or maybe question mark over them is, are they solid enough or defensive enough at the back to really push on? I think probably that's where Kevin Welch kind of probably came in for a lot of criticism at the time, is he probably went that bit more defensive with them. But yeah, like I said, they are bringing through a lot of good players. It'll be interesting to see how many come through from that under 20 team from last year. But the thing about Galway is they will always produce good footballers and good teams, is whether they'll be solid enough to actually mix the good football with what needs to be done to win big championship games, I suppose.
And will they beat Roscommon?
I don't know. I think Roscommon are similar enough. Again, from our point of view, we're looking at Roscommon, like you'd be looking at some of the key forwards that they have that are very, very good players. You know, they have the two Smiths, Connor Cox, two Mercers, if they play, are a very good footballer. But again, you'd always have that doubt with them probably at the background midfield. So I think they are two very evenly matched teams. It would be interesting, but I suppose going to what we've seen from Galway's potential last year, I think they probably should come out on top.
And a Galway Mayo Connacht final, who wins that?
I have to say Mayo, I suppose, don't I? No, I think that'll be the big one, I think, for Mayo as well, to see if they've kind of kicked on from, I suppose, last year's kind of final. Like, I mean, you know, you bring in three new fellas, the likes of Oisín Owen and Tommy Conroy there. You know, they obviously bedded in straight away. There was no issues with them. Like, they were flying. Whether James can get another couple of the under young lads or the under-20s from last year to come through would be the big thing. Whether those three lads can continue the form on. So, look, from Mayo point of view, I'd be saying, yeah, we should be winning that. But, look, Mayo go kind of final. It can be a toss of the coin sometimes without trying to sit on the fence, to be honest.
Oisín?
Yeah, I just think goal is the interesting one. I think, you know, when Keith talks about the bounce, there's a bounce, and then, you know, obviously they were hurt dramatically by the fact that, you know, they had all that momentum built up, and then all of a sudden it wasn't there. Obviously, you know, not playing a game before the kind of final last year didn't help. Even if it's a game of any description, it doesn't really matter, because, you know, like, you're probably not giving away everything in the league. Although I'll argue later that, you know, there's less of a chance for Division One teams to keep their powder dry, you know, like they may have done in the past. So Galway is the interesting one for me. I wouldn't think it would take a huge amount of improvement from Galway to really trouble Mayo and maybe even get over the line against them. That's not discounting Roscommon, because I think Roscommon, if I was looking at those three teams in particular, I would say that Roscommon have the potential to continue improving. I still think that they haven't made the most of the, you know, the forwards that Keith talked about. I think there's an opportunity to make more of those players. And then Mayo, when I look at Mayo last year, a lot of people will see it again as a disappointing year, but I actually look at it and look at Mayo used more players last year than any other team in the country, from the start of the league right through the championship, 37, 38 players. Joanne Cantwell asked me at halftime of the match, at halftime of the All-Ireland final, what would you do with a sweeper? I'd say, I was thinking, the scar tissue from the past would mean that you will have to have a deep sitting sweeper that's going to protect you from conceding that 2-6 that they had done the previous year. And they actually come out and they didn't do that, and they went forward. And so when people talk about the scar tissue with Mayo, I'm not so sure that that's maybe as evident as we thought it was. And I think the new players have given them a serious lift. Oisín Mullen, for the first 25 minutes of the All-Ireland final, was absolutely outstanding. I just think that with Mayo, I still think there's a little bit more to come. I think for Mayo to win an All-Ireland, probably need somebody to take Dublin out along the way. But certainly Mayo, in my estimation, are the second best team in the country, have proven that, are able to cope with the big days. And that's, you know, not discounting the fact that they haven't been able to get across the line in All-Ireland final. But still, when it comes down to the crunch, when they played Donegal in McHale Park a couple of years ago, and 2 years ago, and they needed that win. It was them that come out with the win. So I would say they're the second best team in the country, and really, Galway will have to, as I say, kick on another little bit in order to win a Connacht title. At this stage, you couldn't look past Mayo. And again, you look at the development of the players. And again, if you were to add one or two more to the setup that they had last year, actual starters, it's amazing what that can do for a team, because you've seen what the three boys done last year. And Tommy Conroy is an interesting one. I still think that physically he has a lot of development to do, and I think there's no doubt he has made the most of the off-season. It'd be interesting to see. Remember, we've seen the development in Conor Callaghan. I think we might see something similar in Tommy Conroy. I know he's a different frame of a lad and probably doesn't want to be as big as that, but I'd say physically he's in a different space. We'll see him in a different space come kind of championship.
Who's the most difficult forward to mark in Mayo training?
For me, I'd probably say Aidan, just for the fact that he just kind of brushed you out of the way, and you know, it's like I wouldn't even be there, you know, physically wise. But I always found Killian very tough to mark. For the simple reason, he's just very cute. He knows when to make the run, when to stay away. You know, he probably found out that if it was a one-on-one sprint, I'd probably beat him 9 times out of 10. So he kind of found a way around that, you know. But as Ushi mentioned there, Tommy kind of came in last year, and like his first probably 3 steps are so quick that if he gets half a second on you, he's gone. So particularly last year, I found that very difficult. But yeah, like I always find Killian very, very hard to mark. He's just very cute, you know.
Tommy had a difficult All-Ireland final, but it's not unusual for that to happen with a player who has a breakthrough season, then to struggle in an All-Ireland final. And he looks to me like an outstanding footballer. But it can be difficult, of course, in the second season, again, where expectations are a little bit higher and defenders are more used to you and they've got a longer look at you. Did you spend much time when you were going to mark somebody looking at video of them? Did you take much instruction?
I wouldn't have spent a huge amount of time looking at video. I suppose you would have spent, you know, you'd obviously look at a few bits and pieces. You might look back at the previous couple of games and just look at a few clips, but you might try and get a few tendencies on what they do, but I would never have gotten overly, you know, I wouldn't say worried is the word, but, you know, I wouldn't have been overly focused on them. I'd always kind of mark a fella the same way regardless, to be honest, and that kind of might have been my downfall at times, but you know, I'd kind of like to be on the front foot and kind of maybe play from in front and go up the pitch a bit as well. So again, I wouldn't have been overly worried about looking at too much stuff, whereas I know all the lads would have spent a lot of time analysing players and look at what they do. So I think it is a very individual thing, and lads have to kind of figure out what works best for themselves, you know. But like I said, I think next season is going to be particularly interesting for the three boys, whether they can keep that kind of momentum going that they had, the three younger lads from Mayo. So I suppose just on Oisín's point earlier on, like, Tommy did physically develop an awful lot from, they kind of came in at the end of 2019 as well, himself and Oisín Mullen, just towards the end of the year when the under-20s finished. The way he developed even in that kind of few months was massive. So if he can have half that development again, you know, there's a massive potential there for him.
If whoever wins the Connacht Championship in the All-Ireland semi-final, they play the champions of Leinster. And if you look at the Leinster draw, it seems to me that the standout fixture is Offaly Louth in the first round. It's
Jesus while Christ.
while Mickey Hart coming down with Louth after 18 years managing Tyrone, what he will bring to the Leinster Championship will be really interesting to see. And I know if I was an Offaly footballer, and I suppose I haven't formally retired, so I can consider myself still in the hunt for a place. But if I was an Offaly footballer, I would be really excited about that match and the attention that would be on that match at the time, and the prospect of of doing something of it. Now, it's people are very dismissive about Leinster football because of the dominance of Dublin, and I get it, but there are local rivalries here, which even in the, in a local context, really matter to the people of the Midlands. So you look at, for example, Laois v Westmeath, which for the people of those counties is a massive game, and they, it's a match that's often played in Tullamore, so I've seen it for a long time. Wicklow v Wexford is actually the oldest Gaelic football rivalry. It dates from 1886, a match which Charles Stewart Parnell went to in 1886, and the crowd was so big, the crowd actually joined in with the players in some of the matches. It was held on Parnell's land in Avondale, and the players, the spectators had to be driven off the pitch with sticks when they tried to join in. Carlow Longford, for Carlow, would be interesting to see what they do, but the big beast is undoubtedly Dublin. Oisín, Dublin and Leinster, how do you see that?
Well, look, I get what you're saying, Paul, and that will be an intriguing game between Offaly and Louth, and probably that will be predetermined by how Louth have steered their way through Division 4, and we'll probably know fairly early on the impact that that Mickey Hart is having in Louth. There is huge excitement. Players who, like, I'll put it this way to you, I've never had a loud footballer ring me before, because I'd be dealing with them a lot, obviously, because I'm involved in the Dock Institute Technology, and there's 10 years. I've never had a loud player ringing me wondering why they're not on the county panel, whereas this year I've had a lot of phone calls, because a lot of guys want in there as opposed to out, which they had done in the past. And so that's this may sound ridiculous, but that's number one thing, is to try and get your best players into that panel and try and get them mobilised. Mickey Hart will have an influence, but there still needs to be substance behind all that. And I do believe there's good enough players in Louth, first of all, to get them out of Division 4. Which interestingly is the GAA's version of the Super League. when you consider all of the Galactico managers that we have there. But I just think that there's a cloud hanging over the Leinster Championship, and that cloud is Dublin. And as much as you guys in Leinster will want to get away from it and remove yourselves from that, it's still there. It's still very obvious. So you're telling me that in a knockout championship, which, let's face it, shortchanges GAA players in a massive way for the second year in a row. But if you're thinking as a Gaelic footballer in Leinster, that how do we show progress? So for Louth or Offaly, maybe it's getting past that first round. But is that enough, Paul? Is that enough, you know?
Absolutely not. The winners of Offaly would have to beat Kildare in a Leinster quarterfinal. You have to beat, if you're Offaly, you have to beat Louth, and then you have to beat Kildare. And then, because the draw for the semi-finals hasn't been made, you could then get a cut. You get a cut at either Laois or Westmeath, or possibly Meath, Carlow or Longford on one side of it, if you avoid Dublin. So you're true to a Leinster final. So that prospect is there.
Yeah, and I think anybody who's thinking progress has to be thinking about a Leinster final, because I do think, as much as there's a massive gap between Division 2 and Division 4, I do think that there is the opportunity for all of the teams who are involved to make that. It wouldn't be a giant leap for Offaly, Louth, Wexford, Wicklow, Westmeath, Laois. It wouldn't be a massive leap for any of those teams to end up in a Leinster final, in my estimation. And that's the only way I think that those teams can show progress.
I agree with that. I will say, by the way, Louth were in Division 2 3 years ago, so there are clearly footballers in the county, and Louth club football, there are some very fine footballers in that. Keith, when you looked at Leinster Championship matches, if you ever looked at them, did you ever really bother about any county other than Dublin?
Yeah, like you definitely would have watched the games. You would have nearly watched them more as, I suppose, a supporter, well, not a supporter, but like a kind of you know, not he wouldn't be analysing them, I suppose, put it that way. Because ultimately, like, the way things are at the moment, like, Dublin, the only team they're going to come out of Leinster. You know, I think even looking at last year there was kind of all talk about Meath putting up them in the league when they came back, and those big hopes that they might do the same to the Leinster final, and like that game was over in 10 minutes. So, like, I suppose without dismissing any of the teams there, and like I said, there are good footballers and there are decent teams there. And I suppose, like you said there, Paul, it's funny when I was looking at the draw, I was thinking Offaly Louth could be a decent game. The fact that the winners are playing Kildare and they fancy their chances, I suppose, of that if they get over the first hurdle, especially, and then Laois and Westmeath again. Shouldn't be a bad game of football, I suppose, but ultimately, like, I mean, when you're looking at the draw, like, you're penciling Dublin as Leinster champion straight away, and after that, then you're kind of, the rest of the games are just hopefully a bit of entertainment value without being too dismissive of them.
There's a few managers, I think, Paul, you know, in the Leinster Championship who are in a really, they're sort of in an interesting space as far as, you know, within the counties that they're now in, like the Jack O'Connors and the Mike Quirks and Gaze Lagasse, they're very much under a microscope. Some of it may be a little bit unfair in that, like, it's very difficult at the minute to make massive progress in such a disjointed time. But look, at people don't look at it like that. People just look at it on results, and Jack O'Connor probably in particular is one where a lot of people would have looked at it and said that's a decent appointment and would have probably expected a lot more progress, and that sort of hasn't materialized, and just you're wondering if maybe there's a possibility that may materialize now. But it's obviously going to be very difficult. There's not a huge amount of time spent with teams as far as collective training is concerned. No challenge matches going into the league, so really there's a lot of teams who will get I think everybody's guaranteed 5 games, which is not a lot when you consider the amount of work that has gone in behind the scenes.
Kildare are the great enigma. They produce exceptional underage players, big and strong, they're fast, they're good footballers, and something just doesn't pull together when they get to senior level. I will say Mike Quirk. I think Mike Quirk's done a brilliant job in Laois. When you see the list of footballers that he didn't have last year to be as competitive as they were aware of to do in the league, to do what they did is fantastic. I think Westmeath is interesting. Westmeath have done really well at underage and in schools level of 4 Division 1 Leinster schools teams and are producing footballers. But they went really negative when they played Dublin last year. And at the end of the day, Dublin's winning margin in last year's Leinster Championship with average winning margin was 18 points. So that's a huge gap for anyone to really have aspirations of filling. Can I ask you, Keith, when Mayo played against Dublin, what did Mayo focus on?
Yeah, our big thing, I suppose, probably over that 5, 6, 7 years was always pushing high on Dublin and really just, I suppose, attacking them, trying to match them, I suppose, physically and trying to match them athletically as well, because, you know, our view was that if you kind of let them just have the ball and you sit back, you know, they're that good, they'll work way around you. So we always felt that we kind of had the players physically and athletically that we could match them, and it was really just kind of attacking them was, I suppose, the best form of defense that we thought we had against them. And, you know, it nearly worked on occasions, but unfortunately it was never good enough. But yeah, that was always our approach anyways.
Which of the Dublin forwards is the best that you've marked?
Like, without getting, I suppose, look at the current players, I wouldn't have marked the likes of Conn too much. Obviously Burner's gone, Jim McConnelly's gone, Kieran Kilkenny was again very good. The fact that he was constantly moving, constantly looking to get on the ball. You know, like, I even remember 2015, Paddy Andrews gave me a bit of a roast and won the semi final. I know he's gone as well, so. Like, I'm kind of looking at the forwards that they have there now, and it has changed an awful lot, that forward line, the last couple of years. But I suppose looking at it from being so close, I think Conn is probably the best forward that they have at the moment. Like, I mean, you can play him in the full forward line, and he can be devastating in front of goal. You can play him on the half forward line if you really needed it, you know. So I think he's kind of the all-around the best forward that they have, whereas, like, Kieran Kilkenny then just kind of plays a different role for them.
Do you think Dublin are as good as they were?
That's a strange. My initial thought would be no, but then again, you look back on them this year and last year, and they never seem to be troubled throughout the championship. Like, you know, always no Kerry brought them through a replay, but like they just seem to be able to regardless of who's there, play the same type of game. They never panic, which is probably the biggest thing for them, regardless of how things are going. They just keep their cool. They keep playing the same way. They never look flustered. So, like, your initial thought is they're not as good as they were and that they could be there for the taking. But, you know, like I said, we haven't really seen anyone get close to them. So, they have to say that they still are as good as they are.
Do you have a relationship with any Dublin players? Is there a friendship there on any level?
No, I suppose we'll put it simply. And that's not out of not wanting to or not trying to have a friendship. But you never get a chance to meet these guys. You know, I'd say the only time I would have met them outside of being on the football, which might have been at an All-Stars ceremony or something like that, or out on an All-Stars trip. And that's the end of maybe for one night or for a couple of days. So, no, but that's it. Look, not out of any kind of badness or anything. You just never have the chance to kind of form those relationships. Or I haven't, anyways.
When you retired, did I read that you got messages from a Dublin player or some Dublin players? Is that correct?
Yeah. I got a few texts, in fairness. A few kind of messages on social media and all that, I suppose, just because they might be having the number or whatever. But yeah, and like, I suppose that's something different. Like, I would have always made an effort as well to kind of send a message to a few guys who had a marked down through the years once they retire, just out of respect more than anything else. Like, I mean, my view on it is you have the run-ins with these guys on the pitch, you're both there to do what you want, but at the same time, there has to be a bit of mutual respect. And, you know, in fairness, I kind of appreciated getting those texts as well, because as much as you dislike them on the pitch, in the day, like, they're striving for the same thing you are off it.
Yeah, speaking coming off the pitch, was there a bit of messing at half time?
A bit of messing, all right, Josh. Look, at that stage, I was going to get a bit bored sitting up in the stand. I need to do something. So, we'll probably just say a bit of messing. Might leave it at that then. The tunnel in Croke Park is too small, sure. They need to make it a bit bigger.
Oisin, did you have friendships with players from other counties when you were playing the game? Or is it something that developed afterwards?
Just probably one or two that I would have went to school with from different counties, but I hadn't gone to college, so I hadn't built up those relationships, and I think that's where the majority of those relationships are built and fostered. And so, no, I wouldn't talk to... And even, like, myself and Collie Holmes were fairly tight, school and after school and all that there, but... we didn't speak for probably 2 or 3 years because of what was going on with our man's own. So, no, nothing happened between us. No, we just, I don't know, it was just like an unwritten type thing. We just never bothered with each other. A colleague got married in the middle of all that. I think that was the last, opportunity I had really to speak to him. It was I was groom's man for him, and his, obviously the wedding party was full of Tyrone heads. So, it was quite a difficult day, but we got through it all right, and we just left it at that then for a while, and just picked it up where it left off, you know. So, but yeah, that was my sort of relationship. I wouldn't really had any major relationship with anybody until I was finished playing, and then sort of more or less don't think I'm on bad terms with anybody, not even the cornerbacks.
If we move, I think I take it we're saying that Dublin will win the Leinster Championship this year. I don't think it's an outrageous prediction to make that. If we look at, and that's not to be disrespectful of the people who they're competing against. It's just the evidence suggests, everything that you've read, the evidence suggests that Dublin will win the Leinster Championship. Again, the Munster Championship, Clare versus Kerry, and the winners play Tipperary, and on the other side it's Waterford Limerick versus Cork. Oisin, how do you see that going?
Well, just thinking at least the big two have been kept apart, Tipperary and Cork. I think that Kerry are forearmed, forewarned, a wounded animal, hurt, all of those things that you can think of, and yet probably still susceptible in a one-off game because defensively still not convinced about them. I read this morning Peter Crowley has retired, 30 years of age. Guys are retiring way too early, still had a lot to offer, brought a bit of physicality to that Kerry defence that they are sadly lacking. So Kerry are still very, very susceptible to on one-off games, but look, you would, as I say, it's it's been like, even though it's only a couple of months ago altogether, it must have felt like an eternity, you know, going out of that early stage, watching how other teams were progressing, and then watching Kerry watching Dublin and Mayo playing an All-Ireland final. It must have stung and it must have hurt. And when in a situation like that, I always refer to it, it's a little bit like pregnancy, because
three men are going to talk about pregnancy.
when after we had our first child, my wife said to me before we left the maternity ward to have a good look around, that we wouldn't be back in here, and that was because how tough the pregnancy was, how tough the labour was, all the things that go with it. But we've been back in twice, so the pain goes away, if you know what I mean. And the thing about, like, I can imagine how stung those Kerry players were. We heard very little from them for a long time. Obviously, there was rumours around Peter Keane and what was happening there. There was a massive fallout for them getting beaten by Cork. And as I say, it hurts for a long time. But that hurt starts to wane as time goes by. But look, as I say, like, they are good enough to win a Munster championship. And as I say, they've had it. Look, at that. I don't think the draw really mattered to them. I think the more games they get in Munster, the better. But I still think, like, you know, we started talking about players who are willing to sacrifice their game. I think that's more so evident in Kerry than anywhere else. And I think, you know, we talked last year for a long time about how they had changed up the half forward line, how they developed that. That didn't materialise against Cork. The work rate wasn't near what it should have been. They felt they were going to go in and be able to blow Cork away. And this Kerry team's not good enough to blow teams away anymore. They have to match them for work rate. And if they do that with the teams in Munster, then they'll have. I still think they're the team to beat there, and they will win the Munster Championship. But there's not enough. What's the best way? There's not enough bad children in that Kerry defence.
And the baddest of them all is now gone.
I don't think it scares anybody. I think people enjoy playing against Kerry, and probably the biggest insult you can get is a team that you enjoy playing against the team. It's a little bit too nice, and if they can sort that out, then look, they'll be there or thereabouts when it comes to even, you know, the latter stages of the All-Ireland. But they've had a lot of work to do to win an All-Ireland, but they should come out a monster.
Kate, the rain has fallen from the sky. The time is ticking off in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. You're watching that game. Mark Keane scores. How did you feel?
I suppose it's like anyone watching, you're kind of, I wouldn't say you're happy, but I mean, you're happy to see a bit of drama and a bit of excitement to the game, because up to that, there was nothing happening, you know. But I suppose there's two things there. And what you said first, it's the first time I've ever heard football is compared to childbirth, anyways, that's for sure. But the second one, yeah, I'd...
A roller coaster with this fella every week.
Stick around, Keith. It gets worse.
I'll quit while I'm ahead here. And the second, like I expect Kerry to come through Munster handy enough. I think you look at last year, and like it was just a freak kind of a championship. I think. I mean, if Kerry had bet Cork, I think they'd have bet Tipperary handy in that Munster final. You know, I know what Oisín's saying there about them being nice to play against or not having enough kind of that meanness to them, but at the same time, I never felt like we were going to have a nice game playing Kerry just by the forwards that they have and the quality of the forwards that they have alone. You know, so I think if they can take the shackles off a small bit and go a bit more, like, I mean, that game against Cork, I think they played into Cork's hands because they mirrored what Cork were doing and played a bit too defensive, whereas if they'd just gone after it and pushed up and just, you know, threw Cork to the wind a small bit more, I mean, I think they could have won that game easy. When Kerry play attack and football, I mean, they're as good as what's out there. So I think if they kind of get their act together a small bit like that, as, you know, as Oisín said, get a bit more meanness in defence, if that's there, I can see them pushing the top two teams in the country 100%.
I don't know what you guys think about DNA or that a team, or there's a certain culture surrounding a team, or a team has a certain ethos. But I always think that that's more prevalent in Kerry because they've tried to remove themselves from it a couple of times, and they've done things that have tried to move with the times, but they seem to still, everybody seems to still revert back to the fact that, look, at if they take you on, push up on you, and play front foot football, then that's where they're at their best. And maybe at this stage, just thinking a little bit too much about it. And that, you know, the fact that they can hurt you from so many positions up front, and that they changed that last year. I watched them the first day they played Monaghan they played them in Enniskeen, actually, in the league. And that was the first time that they had gone with two very defensive wing forwards. And they had enough that day to get by Monaghan. But I'm not sure if that's in the DNA or if that even makes any difference. I'm trying to figure it out in my head as we speak. But sometimes you look at them and you look at some of the players playing certain positions and you think they don't look as comfortable as what they should do. So I'm not sure if there's more in that whole DNA thing than we give credit for.
Yeah, I suppose the one thing I'd say on that is, like, again, it's not a whole, for me, it's not a whole DNA thing, but I'm looking at, obviously, like, Sean O'Shea, Clifford, Gini, if he's fit. You have three of the best forwards in the country there. Like, you have David Moore out midfield, like, a superb kick pass for the ball from 60 yards. Like, I mean, it's kind of, your play to your strengths, I suppose, is the main way I'd put it. Like, I mean, get the ball to those boys as quickly as you can. Don't have Sean O'Shea or Clifford chasing back into their own half. You know, keep them where they're strongest. Like, you know, it's not a whole DNA thing. It's just playing to your strengths, I suppose. Now, I know you have to kind of counter that with kind of protecting yourself defensively and setting yourself upright, but at the same time, keep them boys where they'll do the most damage.
How do you rate David Clifford?
Ah, look, he's up there with as good as what's around. He's 6 foot something or other. Like, he's a big man. He's quick, kick off both feet. Like, I know even when we played them 2019 a couple of times, like, you're looking at him going, well, what's the best way to mark this fella? Like, you know, if you're playing from front, they'll probably just put in a high ball on top of him the way they were playing at the time. Like, he's cute as well. He'll be hanging on to you. He'll be dragging out of the fullback or the cornerback, and then he'll make his run. And if the defender holds on to him, he's calling at the ref. Like, so he's cute enough as well for a young lad. But look, talent-wise, like, he's as good as what we've seen in an awful long time.
Is there a bit of an edge between Kerry and Mayo?
There can be, yeah, there can be. I suppose it's just like we would have played each other so much down in the last few years, whether it's league or championship. There's never a huge amount in the games. But yeah, there probably is a bit of a niggle there at this stage. Now, it's not out of, I don't think there's any real badness to it. But yeah, there can be a little bit of niggle in the games, all right, yeah.
Is there much by way of verbals?
Not that I'd be aware of, to be quite honest. I suppose, look, I don't know what things are like up in Ulster, but that's a different kettle of fish altogether. But yeah, look, there's very few players, or I'd have come across very few players that'd be into that. You might have one or two on some of the teams, but like my experience down through the years, like, maybe it's just me being oblivious to it or not wanting to get involved in it, but I'd see very little of it anyways.
Is there verbals between Mayo and Dublin on the field?
Again, I wouldn't see much of it, to be quite honest with you. If I'm standing in cornerback American Dean Rock, I'm not going to be talking to him, or he's not going to be talking to me. Whether it happens further out the pitch, I'd be brutally honest here, I don't know. You'd probably see some players on television who seem to be constantly talking, but I wouldn't say it goes on all over the place. I'd say if it does go on, it's few and far between at this stage.
And you would take it, if we look at that championship, I think Limerick made a lot of progress last year. I think Limerick were really unlucky not to beat Tipperary in the first round. I think Limerick will beat Waterford, and I think Limerick could give Cork a really serious game in that other semi-final. I think Kerry will beat Clare, and I think Kerry will beat Tipperary, but I still think it'll be a Kerry-Cork final. And are we taking it that it'll be Kerry?
For me, it will be, yeah. It'll be interesting to see how Cork react after that Munster final last year, but pound for pound, yeah, if I'm looking at that, I'd still be seeing Kerry come out on top all day long.
Look, at Cork seemed to be in a, you know, a much better place. Seemed to be much more thought and resources being put into them. And they look a well coached team last year. With the existing frailties that have been there for some time now, because the big test was not Kerry for me. The big test was backing it up against Tipperary, like we talked about last year, and not being able to do that has to sting with them, you know. Also, but they'll be probably coming up against the Kerry team who probably haven't forgotten enough for them to you know, to be slightly off like they were last year.
If Kerry win the Munster Championship, they play the winners of Ulster in the All-Ireland semi-final. Oisín, will that be Tyrone?
Tyrone's a really tough position now. I think knockout football hurts Ulster teams more than any other. That's my own personal view, because I do think that Donegal, Tyrone, possibly Monaghan, possibly Armagh, possibly Cavan are the teams that could, you know, in a backdoor system, end up in quarterfinals without any major fuss. So Tyrone are up against it. They play Cavan in the first round. So like, we haven't seen anything of what way Tyrone will have reacted to the, first of all, the new impetus in the panel, new management, how they're taking on the instruction after listening to the same person for so long. You would imagine that there should be a huge bounce in them. I don't think it helps the fact that that their Division One campaign is Monaghan, Armagh, and Donegal. I don't think that helps anybody. I don't think that helps the Ulster Championship. I don't think players are. Look, I don't think it's right. I think it should have been. Sorry.
It's like a McKenna Cup. It's like a mini McKenna Cup being played in that division. It's
like a mini Ulster Championship, but all the teams who would have a prospect of winning. But if you look at Tyrone's run, so Tyrone have
Cavan in the quarterfinal and play the winners of Monaghan or Fermanagh.
No. They play the winners of Down, Donegal and Derry. And I think the fact that Donegal should be hurting from last year. I'd really be interested in what Keith has to say about how they performed down in Mayo a couple of years ago. But I just think that there's a serious question mark, a massive question mark against Donegal now. And the reason for that is that the games that they really have been expected to win, should have won, they haven't won in the last 3 or 4 years. Also on top of that, when you consider the players that they had coming through, the talent that they've had coming through, I don't think they've made the most of that at all. So, look, if Tyrone are going to win an Ulster Championship, if they get by Cavan, which there's a good possibility they will, because they have a good tradition against Cavan, but also they have to get by Donegal. And then I think whoever comes through that side will probably win the Ulster Championship. I think an interesting one on the far side is who gets to the final. Fermanagh, I suppose, are on the wane. And I think Monaghan and Armagh will be an interesting one. If anybody knows the caption that I'm thinking about in my head of Geezer and Banty. Geezer was over Kildare and Banty was over Meath. And they got quite close together on a certain occasion, but so that would renew that rivalry, and I think that's realistically what we're looking at. Probably Donegal, Tyrone one side, and Armagh on the other.
Keith,
yeah, look, that's the one good thing about the Ulster Championship. I mean, is you just don't know where to start when you're looking at all these games. You know, Tyrone, Cavan. Like, it would be interesting to see from both sides how Tyrone react to the new management, like Oisín said, how Cavan react to having a good year last year, whether they can back it up. You know, same with Monaghan, like after losing to Cavan there the way they did last year, how will they react to that on their side? Whether Armada, like there's so many questions around that and there's so much interest in games in it. Like it's, you just wish all the championships were like that, you know. But on Oisin's point about Donegal, yeah, I suppose they do. You just don't know where you are with them sometimes, I suppose. They have so much talent there, and there was so much talk about them last year when the team put up to Dublin. Oh, again, where will they be this year? Like, I mean, they should be kind of pushing on and, you know, if not winning that Ulster title, pushing a bit further. But again, you just suppose you can't really guarantee anything with them.
It's if you look at Donegal, though, in the Michael Murphy era, it's the most successful era in the history of Donegal football. And if Michael Murphy's powers are begin to wane, or if they are waning, he's so fundamental to what Donegal do. Donegal could end up slipping back into the pack a little bit here, whereas Tyrone could be at the start of a cycle with goals coming through.
Well, if Tyrone are at the start of a cycle, then so should Donegal. I think Donegal arguably have had more talent through. You look at, all you have to do is look at Brennan, McGee, Langan, Oisin Gallen. That's only just, that's simply off the top of my head. And like the likes of Ray McHugh, and you know, the more established guys. Yeah, the more established guys who are now seasoned championship players, and more importantly, seasoned Ulster championship players. You would think that they still have the opportunity to be on an upward curve. And you know what? Michael Murphy is only on the wane, as far as I can see, as far as how much ground he can cover. Still think the obvious thing is to stick him full forward and look at the weapon he is in there. And even if he maneuvers himself between 14 and 11, I still think that would you know, give him a few more years in the game at the top level, having a serious impact. But the days of Michael Murphy being around the middle of the field, for me, and having watched even the Ulster final last year and what was a pretty condensed pitch in Armagh, just not having the same influence over the game that he should have. But I still think that he's a long way from finished, and he could have that influence in the full forward line.
Have we been too dismissive of Tipperary in Munster, and are we being too dismissive of Cavan in Ulster? They are provincial champions. They, in a championship that was in it, okay, it was a very particular type of championship, but they should have flowed from that. Is there a possibility that they can take that forward this year, Tipperary and Cavan and Ulster?
Well, I'd say, again, without being disrespectful to Tipperary, I think you look at Kerry and they should be the team that should be driving on in Munster. With Cavan, I wouldn't say I'm dismissing them. Like, I mean, again, I think they, out of them and Tipperary, I think they're the team that could potentially put a decent season back to back again this year. But that first game against Tyrone is going to be huge. I mean, as you said, I expect a bounce off Tyrone with the new management team after how last year went for them. So for Cavan, it will all depend on that first game. If you get over that, you will know where they could go.
There was a very there has been a very intense rivalry between Mayo and Tyrone as well. You've got the better of them quite often. Keith, why is that?
I don't know. We would never have feared Tyrone, I suppose. You know, even going back, I'd say maybe 2013 when we played them in the semi-final. Even 2016 as well. It was 2016, yeah, when they were going well and we got them in the semi-final, quarter-final again. We would never have feared them. We would never have thought that, you know, they were above us, I suppose, or they were better than us. So, and like we would have bet them an awful lot in the league over the last probably 7-8 years as well. So I think that's kind of where that confidence came
always
from.
Always tight games and memorable matches in particular where you kind of pulled it out of the fire.
Yeah, no, I know we lost a few of them as well, but like I said, a lot of the time we would have come out on top. So it was like I said, there was just a confidence there that we could beat them. And that, yeah, if we kind of played to the pace that we wanted to play, that we would have been better than them on the day.
Does that imply that confidence wasn't there for playing against either Dublin or Kerry?
Not necessarily Kerry anyways. Again, I think, I'm probably going back maybe to 2017 probably here as well, which is probably a good few years ago at this stage. But like, particularly in the league for the few years coming up, that we would have bet them an awful lot in the league. Even 2019, we bet them in the league down there, we bet them in the league final. So again, I know they gave us a good hiding down in Killarney in the Super 8, so I think that might have been a kind of bit of payback for those two games. But yeah, again, there wouldn't have been a huge fear of them. We would have respected them, ultimately, given the players that they had. But there wouldn't have been a huge fear against them. Dublin, then again, I suppose, is a slight bit different. Again, we would have never feared them, but I suppose it probably mightn't have, deep down, mightn't have been that confidence there that we could really go on and beat them because we hadn't been doing it in the league as well. So I think the league, for us, it kind of gave us a platform to build on league performance, that if we met a team in the championship, that we knew that we had the beating of them.
So who do we take then as winners of the Ulster Championship?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
Personally speaking, I've been burned too many times by Donegal now, so I'm going to stay clear of them. I'm going to go Tyrone.
Keith?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, you look at Donegal having to come through the preliminary round again. Like, I mean, again, you'd imagine there'd be a bit of bounce off down as well. Like, I mean, they should get over that, but I don't think they'll have it all their own way for a lot of that game. You know, if they have to play Derry and then the winners of Tyrone, Cavan, and then potentially a Mon or a Man, a final, it just seems a bit difficult for them, probably week on week at this stage. So I'd nearly take a punt, and if it isn't Tyrone, I'd nearly go with the Monaghan if there is that bounce off them after what happened last year.
Okay, so we again get to All-Ireland semi-finals, and it's, if we're going Dublin v Mayo and Kerry v Tyrone or Monaghan, who wins that All-Ireland championship?
Oh, I'll let you take that, O'Shane.
Dublin, put me neck in the lane. Go Dublin.
That's quite brave, Oisin. Keith?
It'd be just my luck that it'd be Mayo that would win it this year as soon as I walk away. But yeah, look, I think the huge one would be, okay, if Mayo are playing Dublin in a semi final, like, I think any time we've played them since 2015 has always been Ireland finals, and they haven't gone too well. So whether Ireland semi final would be different, I don't know. Look, I suppose as much as the heart wants to say Mayo, I think the head has to kind of look at the way Dublin have been performing over the last few years, and they don't seem to be showing any sign of that dropping off, so they have to be favourites again.
And they've a good bit of walk done.
That's why I went and put Monaghan up in Ulster as well.
Yeah. That extra bit of training pulls everyone through. Do you think then who wins between Kerry and either Tyrone or Monaghan? That Kerry in the All Ireland final.
I go with Kerry anyways. I think, as Oisin said, if they can get their house in order, maybe defensively and whatever, I think they have probably the firepower to get them there. Yeah.
And then it's Kerry. Oisin, you're going with Dublin.
Because I still don't think how Kerry can man that Dublin forward line. And as much as it's changed and it's been tweaked and all that sort of thing, still have unbelievable weapons there. And they not only have that, but they have a know-how in the last 10, 15 minutes of the game, because they're never going to be too far away. They have that know-how of how to get across the lane. And I think that's, as well as, you know, obviously a very good bench. And that bench is changing. And the bench has not been as significant as it once was. But there's still a huge amount of experience on that bench.
Keith, we've spoken a lot on the podcast last year about the strength of James McCarthy and Brian Fenton, and the argument being that whether McCarthy plays in the half-back line or plays in midfield, that he's fundamental to what Dublin do, and what Fenton's contribution is obvious in almost every game that Dublin play. What way did Mayo approach those two players?
I suppose Fenton in particular would have been a case of, obviously, he would have designated one of the midfielders to actually just pick him up throughout the game. I wouldn't have called it a specific man marking job, but you know, you would have had someone who would have been tracking him or trying to, I suppose, minimize his impact on the game. But yeah, look, for McCarthy, then again, depending on where he played. You know, if you played in the half back line, you're not really going to designate a kind of half forward who wants to be tracking the whole time. You want to be trying to get him in the back foot. But again, like, they're just so good, two boys, that regardless of who you put on them, when there's that much room out and on the middle of the field in Croke Park, they're ultimately going to cause you a lot of bother anyway. So I think even McCarthy, like, I mean, he's just his engine for driving up and down the pitch all day long. Like, Fenton is so good on the ball. with Jan McCarthy is just, I suppose people call him the Rolls Royce for engine, and he is, in fairness, like, but like, yeah, we would have put designated someone to mark him, but again, it wouldn't have been an out and out man marking job, to put it that way.
It feels like the same, it's back then to the same group of people at the top end of the championship.
Yeah, and so you look at last year, Paul, and you know, like, did we give Tipperary or Cavan a chance? So with knockout football, you know, we said last year anything could happen and anything can happen. But I just think, again, the cloud that looms large over that is the Dublin one. You know, and they just seem to be so far ahead in Leinster. So you're coming out of Leinster really unbruised, and then you're going into an All-Ireland semi-final, and then you're clicking in the gear because you're saying to yourself, look at two games and we're All-Ireland champions again. Every time we do this, we're creating history. And when you get into a role like them, it's more difficult to lose than it is, you know, to win. So, you know, they're in a nice position, and Leinster football has made it too nice for them. Not to be just too down on Leinster football, that's just the way it is, and that's the way the cycle has came, but the cycle seems to be lasting forever, you know. And as I say, that's why, you know, when you think about all the things that can change and all the things that possibly might change, and the fact that Tipperary and Cavan come out last year and give us all, restored all of our hope in Gaelic football, and our preconceived notions about it. Dublin are the one thing that looms large over that. So I wouldn't be massively shocked if somebody other than who we mentioned comes out of the provincial championships, like a Galway or a Cavan or a Monaghan or an Armagh or a Cork or somebody like that. So but Dublin is the consistent one here, the one that, as I say, consistently looms large over us all.
Do you think it was a mistake then to have Keith? Actually, do you prefer the knockout championship, or did you enjoy the Super 8? Did you enjoy the backdoor system?
I wouldn't have been a huge fan of the Super 8s, to be honest. I think I just didn't really see the need for it. I thought, you know, once you had your backdoor championship, you know, teams had a second chance, that was it. That was fine. That was fair enough. It wasn't the ideal championship, but I think it was as good as what we had. The knockout, I think it was probably okay last year as a novelty. I think given the times we're in, it's probably the only choice we have. But at the same time, I wouldn't be a fan of going back to it. As we mentioned earlier, you'll have four maybe league games, and then you could potentially have one championship game, and that's your season done. You know, I don't think there's a huge amount for majority of the teams really to be kind of looking forward to seeing when they progress, especially with the condensed league. So I wouldn't be a fan of the knockout championship, to be honest.
Were you interested in the league when you were playing in it?
If you asked me that at the start of my career, I would have said a league medal was never a huge ambition. I think it was more so a case of, you know, it was something that had to be played. But as the year developed, I think the way the league got stronger, as in you were playing the top eight teams every year, you were getting better games, there was so much emphasis put on the jet. We did take it very seriously, and we took it seriously. And that's why 2019, I was delighted that when we won the league final, to be honest. But I think it's definitely gained importance over the last few years.
Thank you very much for joining the podcast, and hopefully we'll talk to you later in the year. Thanks a million as well, Oisín, and to Larry for running the podcast, Tony Lean, and everyone at Examiner Sport. Have a good week, everyone.
Thanks, Paul.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, then.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game. Listen,
hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.